honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with Howard Cook, one of the last of the first. Howard is one of the last remaining members of America's first special mountain warfare unit, the ski troopers of the 10th Mountain Division, who fought in Italy during World War II.
And you said you didn't get wounded, but I'm sure there are some times where you came pretty close, starting with that bullet whizzing by your ear. Are there some other moments that you look back on and you say, boy, I was pretty fortunate to get out of that alive?
I was very fortunate in many cases, because most of the time at night I would take out combat patrols. And of course, one of the things that did for me is the guys that went out with me were C Company guys, and they always wanted to go with me. We'd look for Germans and we attack them. We did well in our combat patrols, and so when it came time for me to take over the company, because we lost a couple of officers and the company commander got wounded, I was only 20, and they made me, because there's a lot of first lieutenants around and could be promoted to captain, but I never got promoted to captain. They just made me acting company commander, see? Because the guys in the company wanted me to be the company commander, because we had some, you know, good experiences on our combat patrols, so they all wanted me to take over. The battalion commander knew that was okay with him, and if the guys wanted me, that I could become the acting company commander. But I never got to be captain, see. I was still the acting company commander of C Company until the war was over.
So what you're saying is you got the responsibility without the rank and the pay raise.
That's right, yeah. But I understood what the problem is, that here's a bunch of other first lieutenants who outranked me by a long shot. What are they going to think if I get made captain? And they don't, because they know I'm just a kid, and I don't know. And the guys in the C Company all were glad that I was made acting company commander, because they knew what to do. We did very well. The rest of the war, we did very well.
And with regard to Riva Ridge, so this was the first place that you experienced combat, but it was really significant in that part of the war. In fact, I think I read it was the most successful Alpine offensive America had ever had in its history to that point. When that was over, when you realized you had secured that high ground and then you could move on and finish off Belvedere and all that, was that a relief when you got to that point, or was it not that clear cut in the fog of war?
Well, I think we were all pretty good. And I said, I think we're going to go on. We had a good feeling because we kept going. And right after that, we had to take Sassamalori. And that was on a ridge top. You know, you had to climb up the ridge to the little town of Sassamalori. It wasn't quite a piece of cake. We lost a lot of guys at Sassamalori, too. You lose a lot of guys because the second platoon leader is killed right away. Oh, my Lord. A lot of the guys were killed there at Sassamalori going up that south ridge, and it just very difficult. They had a lot of weapons up at the top of the hill, the Germans did, and so it was a most difficult battle. So everybody went on and kept going up the road north, and the Germans were quite used to us winning. We kept winning. We did have Air Force support, you know, and doing fine.
A couple of things just on a personal note that I wonder about, and I hope these aren't stupid questions, but maybe the obvious one is, how scared were you? Did you really think that you were going to make it back home to Oakland and see your family again?
Well, I think you always have hope, and I always hoped I would not get injured too badly. But I knew I might get injured because everybody around me were getting injured. Yeah, I knew that was going to happen to, you know, those things are going to happen to you, and you know it. But I never got injured. I just kept going.
And that was my other question. What kept you going? Because you're dealing with cold and wind and fog and mud and sleeping in the elements and, you know, getting shot at, losing your friends, all these things that most of us will never deal with and might want to make us give up. So what kept you going day after day after day?
I guess my mother and father. I thought about my family and how everything was always, you know, how they did everything for us. And I said, I got to take care of those people. I have to take care of our fellow Americans. So that was my drive. My drive was just win. I wasn't going to lose, and I didn't lose. I'm very fortunate that I didn't lose, yeah. Didn't even, as I say, get wounded.
And it sounds like, correct me if I'm wrong, but you were in pretty consistent combat from the time Riva Ridge started in mid-February until VE Day, right?
Well, practically, although I did have, after we took Sassamalari, I contracted pneumonia. I had to go back to the hospital in Livorno to get well, and so I was back there for 4 weeks. And then I came back and joined the tents before the war was over and got up to the Lake Garda, you know. So it's easy to get pneumonia.
I would guess so, considering what you were dealing with. Have you ever pondered? I mean, I'm sure that wasn't easy, being in the hospital for 4 weeks with pneumonia. But have you ever wondered if maybe that saved your life because it took you out of combat for 4 weeks?
Oh, I realized that I was safe in Livorno in the hospital. It didn't stop me from wanting to go back to be with C Company. I wanted to be back there with C Company. You got a group of guys, you just want to be back with them, and you want to help them. So I didn't ever want to leave the front line. I had to stay there.
And Lake Garda was the last battle for the 10th before the war ended in Europe. How much action did you see there?
Well, it was very interesting. 86th First Battalion went up to the right of Lake Garda, up a valley to a place at the northeast end of Lake Garda. Torboli was the name of the little town. We were attacking in this area. It was a valley that went up to the right of mountains that were to the right of Lake Garda. So we wound up around Torboli, and by that time the war was over.
And I believe the other regiments of your division had maybe a more treacherous journey there with the Tunnel of Death right along the side of the lake?
Tunnel of Death. There were several tunnels on that east side of the Lake Garda, several tunnels that you had to go through. As an example, H Company, which was a heavy weapons company, was in one of the tunnels, and the German 88s were successful in firing right into the tunnel and pretty well destroying a lot of the guys from H Company, the weapons company. So that was a very serious problem. And I wasn't there. I was in the hospital still.
And how did you receive that news that the enemy had surrendered and this part of the war is over?
Actually, I found out that the war was just about over when we almost got to Torboli. That's when General Hayes called everybody together and said the war is over. And he had taken the surrender of German and Austrian forces.
What did that feel like to hear him say that?
That was very comfortable. I was comfortable because I wasn't wounded and I didn't have pneumonia anymore and I was all right. I was very fortunate, huh? Very blessed, very blessed.
What was it like to come home from World War II, to come back to the States again?
Well, it was very interesting. I had had a little girlfriend, you remember, when I dated to Pearl Harbor, you know, the day. But then I came back and I knew I had to go back to Cal because I had my first freshman year. I played on the baseball team and Harry Kingman was a former Yankee and he was the coach of the baseball team and I was a third baseman. Then the fall, football. And I had never played football in high school and I didn't know much about it except I thought, oh, I could learn. So Clint Evans was the coach of the freshman football team. And Clint Evans was the baseball coach, too. At that particular point, I went up to Uncle Rudy's house, and a lady walked in there, a young lady about the age of my cousins. We met there in Rudy's house. She kind of looked me over a little bit. After she went back home, she called up and told the girls, I have the folks' car tonight, and we can go to the show. You want to go to the show? She asked the girls, is that guy still there? And so we all went to the show. They wanted to take me to the show, too. So we sat together, this girl and I, Gabriel Edna Forster. So we decided to date together for a little while. And we both went to the University of California. We wound up having lovely times together. So we wound up getting married. And we lived for 73 and a half years together and had a beautiful marriage. And she's still with me in the house here. We had to cremate her, but we wanted to be buried together, and so we'll be buried together.
I'm sure there's a few people listening who say, boy, 73 and a half years, I'd like to be married for that long. You have any advice for them? Was there a secret to the longevity of your marriage?
Love. I think love is if you know a person and you love a person, you can live with them for more than 73 and a half years. See? I would have liked to have it run a little longer, but she had Alzheimer's disease. It's a fatal disease, and it's a pernicious disease. It takes everything away from you. Everything you ever remembered to do, you lose it, you see. So she went through all that. A lovely girl. She's still a lovely girl, but I lost her February 22nd of 2021. At 6:30 a.m. in a hospice up in Duarte. Here's my picture that appeared in Life magazine. This is me, and this is Mrs. Cook. She's a really nice girl. And we reached and touched our hands. And this is the ship I came back from Nagasaki on.
I'm going to put a picture of this at hometownheroesradio.com. So this is Life magazine, and the picture is from 1952 with you coming home on Valentine's Day from the Korean War. How about that? Beautiful.
And look at all these wonderful guys that went in the Korean War, and they're looking out and seeing that we're getting together. And she's down on the wharf, see? And she was the one that was really in trouble because the ship was banging into the wharf. And anyway, these guys are holding on to my ankles.
I was going to say, because you're, you know, at a downward angle out of that little hole in the side of the ship. Yeah, I was hoping someone was holding on to you.
They said, is that your wife down there? And I says, yeah. She says, get out of the porthole. We'll hold your ankles. They let me reach down and grab a hold of her fingers. And then when we got down to the dock, it was better. I could hold her in my arms. We had a good time.
I have one more question for you. Mm-hmm. And if there's anything I didn't ask you about, feel free to add. But I'm just wondering, as you get ready for your 99th birthday here in just a matter of weeks, when you think back over all those years and all the things that you've done and experienced, is there something that you would say you're most proud of or most thankful for?
I'm just most thankful for a wonderful life in the United States of America. And I have a fine career in business, and I've had a lovely life.
Howard Cook, soon to be 99, and we actually have a few more of his memories that wouldn't quite fit into our radio time today. You can find them in the extended podcast version of this episode online. And while you're there at hometownheroesradio.com, you can link to a superb documentary film about the 10th Mountain Division called Climb to Glory. Howard is one of the veterans featured. I want to say a special thank you to Val Rios for connecting me to Howard. Val's late father, Cruz Rios, was the first 10th Mountain Division veteran I ever had the privilege of interviewing, almost 20 years ago now, and Val has done a tremendous job of keeping the legacy of the 10th Mountain Division alive. Thanks so much for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.